I'm Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. It's a political Tuesday, and we're talking about the issues impacting the presidential candidates and the election. My guests are Simone Pathay. She's a political reporter for The Roll Call, and Dr. Lorenzo Morris, political science professor here at Howard University. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kim, calling from Springdale. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Kim, are you... Kim, there you go. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead.
I just wanted to comment that if you take away your right to vote in this election because you're...
Did we lose you, Kim?
Hello, I'm here.
Go right ahead. You said if you take away your right to vote because...
Because you're disenfranchised or you're not happy with either one of the candidates... then you actually are giving a vote to the other party. You're actually casting a vote without casting a vote at all. And so I think because our ancestors have fought so hard for the right to vote in this election, we can't take away that right to vote. And we must exercise our right to vote and let our voice be heard. And for someone like Donald Trump that has never experienced poverty or never experienced being part of the working class, how can we believe that someone that's never had those experiences is going to speak for us or have a voice for us or have any empathy for anything that we're going through in our family?
Okay. Well, Kim, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Before I go back to the phone lines, I want to talk a little bit about Donald Trump's appearance in Detroit at the Black church on Saturday. Your thoughts about that? It was probably one of the highest rated events of the weekend, Simone. Talk to me a little bit about the optics.
I think the optics overall are too little too late, politically speaking, right? I mean, polls consistently show that African Americans support Clinton versus Trump something like 97-0, mm-hmm. maybe even more than that in some polls. The persistent problem you have with Trump is that he speaks about the demographic as it's a monolith, right? And as a previous caller said, maybe he hasn't said enough about African-American women or done enough to parse different parts of a demographic that have different interests. So certainly he gets credit for making the journey. But, you know, whether this is going to really boost his numbers and whether that was his intention to boost his numbers with African-Americans, I think is in question. That's not his base. And if he wins this election, it's going to be by driving out a base that supports him.
Professor, I saw you shake your head when you said getting credit. So talk to me about Saturday. Well, what was right? What was wrong?
You know, we forget that churches are historically not only politically significant for African-Americans, but also sources of loci of civility. And you have to be receptive to whoever comes in. Had he gone to a rapper's concert, it would have gotten as much attention, but had he rapped, we would have been horrified, I'm sure, by the quality, if not by the mere fact. So he goes to a African-American church and pretends to preach by reading a few obviously scripted excerpts from the Bible, and we take that as normal political behavior by ignoring all policy issues. I think it is deserving of attention because it is a form of politicized entertainment. But... as she just indicated, it anticipates no change for African Americans. The problem with it clearly is directed towards assuring that marginal Republican voter who otherwise thinks he's incivil and unsuited for a multi-ethnic and multiracial population that he can at least get over, he can at least get by. Unfortunately, I think for him, the scripting was a bit strong and many people weren't seduced by it, but it was a reasonable effort, so you can give him credit for trying to put on another performance, though I would have rather seen him try to rap.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Judith, calling from D.C. What's on your mind, Judith?
I'm voting the issues, and I'm not voting the issues someone who can name the problems or stereotype what's happening to poor or blacks or immigrants. I'm voting for people who want to continue to move in the direction of solutions. All American citizens are due something as a part of this country. We pay our taxes, we pay into our Social Security, and the Democratic Party and platform, regardless of how you feel about Hillary. I never liked Hillary. What does that matter? She may not like me if she ever meets me. Like don't have nothing to do with it.
So what's the issue, Judith? If you could pick one.
Whether you are talking about how people come into this country has to be reformed all the way across the board, but reformed without tearing apart families that you let into this country as cheap labor, okay? Or whether you're talking about African-Americans being able to have job training and good education so we can compete against those foreign people that are being brought in here that have technical, great education,
okay.
Or whether you're talking about us stopping or curbing our ability to spend our money overseas trying to police the world while our bridges and our tunnels and are falling down on us and people need jobs. Whatever the issues are, I'm voting for solutions, and the Democratic platform proposes more solutions. And I'm not going to be diverted into do I like somebody's hairdo? Do I like them? For years, politicians have done a lot of things when they were the State Department. When the younger Bush was.
Well, hold on, Judith. Judith, I appreciate you. I appreciate your passion. And who knows? You know, maybe in another 4 years, we could see you on the ballot because you seem to have your head on straight. But thank you so much for your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Comfort, calling from Triangle, Virginia. What's on your mind, Comfort?
I personally don't like either candidate. You know, I'm torn between both. We'll just say that. I feel like Hillary Clinton represents, to me, more of the same. I think Donald Trump represents a different approach to things that we really do need to take a real serious look at. It's just the way he communicates those things is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that, you know, Hillary Clinton and the emails is definitely one of my hang-ups. I think I am turned off by Hillary Clinton's ability to me, just, like, go for the black vote by trying to be down. But then Donald Trump doesn't do a better job of trying to get black voters by generalizing us either. So I mean, I don't know who I'm going to vote for, but it'll probably be me, you know, going back and forth until the very end to figure out who I think represents what I want.
Okay.
You know, which is change,
well,
true change.
Comfort, thank you so much for your input. See, Simone, I have a feeling, and you can tell me if I'm off base here, that Comfort is like a lot of voters, that they've got this scale. And you've got Trump on one side, you've got Clinton on the other side, and the scale keeps going up and down on both sides, and it's going to go up and down on both sides all the way up until Election Day.
I think that's true. The one thing you're seeing that's concerning for the Clinton campaign is that there's this enthusiasm gap. Trump supporters are a lot more excited about voting for him than her supporters are. And I think it comes down to what a lot of the callers have said. They support her policies. They think, you know, she would be better for the future of the country, for the Supreme Court. But they're not particularly excited about her. They don't like her. Rare is the voter that is necessarily able to put policy ahead of personality. A lot of undecided and independent voters are making a personality-based decision, a popularity contest, for better or worse. So I think, you know, to the extent that both of these candidates' flaws keep dripping in front of the media, you know, particularly with Clinton, each little thing coming out, it's not that voters are necessarily paying attention to each new story about the emails, but for both of these candidates, it all builds into a narrative that will be in front of them and somewhere in their mind when they enter that ballot.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gail, calling from Silver Spring, what's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind is the press not taking the scandal look at Trump properly. They postponed the hearings regarding the university.
Trump University?
The Trump University. They kind of shoved that under the rug. I personally look at Trump as a bully. I mean, the things he says are outrageous. The attacks he has made on even his Republican party members' wives and families and whatnot. I mean, that's not the type of person I would want to represent me. Mm-hmm. To me, that's, you're looking like you're inviting a whole line of corruption. All he does is finger point, that's not me, these are the people I hired that caused this to happen or that to happen. So if you look at, we are all human, we're going to all make mistakes. The email thing is just way blown out of proportion. It's been dealt with, it should be done. They need to let that rest. And deal with the issue that Trump has, the university scandal, which is a scandal, the fact that he has his clothes made overseas.
Uh-huh.
That's a, you know, all of those things that are wrong with him. Hillary at least is experienced.
Okay.
He's not.
Okay.
I think we should look at experience and not be bullied and think that being a bully is a good thing, because that's all he is doing, is bullying himself into the White House.
Okay. Gail, thank you so much. Professor, you want to comment on that?
Well, I wanted to comment on both points, since in the previous one, which is that those people who have a great deal of ambiguity are historically and absolutely certainly the least likely to turn out. And that's true on both sides. So when you get callers that can't make up their mind, that's likely to have an enduring effect on their turnout. The consistent predictor of turnout is party identification. Even when there is a movement like Quality, like in Reagan. So that when you want to know who's going to turn out of the respondents, it's different from the polling, actually. And one of the likely 75% level of turnout probability comes with polling with party ID. Republicans have a weaker party ID linked to their candidate. Hillary has a stronger party ID. That is Democrats, according to the polls, even if they aren't that enthusiastic about her, have a very strong identification with the Democratic Party, at least in terms of the candidacies. While you can't predict how polling will change, it is very likely that the link to party will be significant. And for Republicans, that is usually estimated as a higher percentage of turnout because they are upper income and generally turn out. Trump brings a break to that link.
Right,
because, by contrast,
because the majority of his followers, according to, you know, polls and all of the analysis, are white men, working class white men without college education.
Yeah, okay. And those, when you have a movement linked to the party, it was a rigging, you get turnout, but without that, you don't. Movement people have high levels of enthusiasm that often don't end up in actual turnout participation. If you look at what happened on the Democratic side, the minute Bernie Sanders' crew got out of the picture, they're the ones who are more hesitant. Trump can expect to hold on to these people until there's some ambiguity. The minute, as we get closer to the election, as that ambiguity between him and the election and the party gets stronger, you can have a lot of the people very enthusiastic about the rallies and still not show up at the polls.
Okay. And let me go to Richard real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Richard, calling from Landover. What's on your mind?
Well, I'd like to mention this about Hillary Clinton, who I favor. The only thing I'm worried about that gives me angst about her is if they keep digging through these emails and they find a little shred of evidence, they're going to eat her alive. Mm-hmm. The evidence, what they're looking for is whether she sent classified information to someone who was not authorized to see it. And they're trying to make it seem like she was sending United States secrets to foreign nationals in that respect.
But and certainly we don't have any proof of even those accusations, and we haven't heard, you know, obviously a lot of that other than from, you know, opposition party. But certainly you make an excellent point, Richard. Still a lot of digging. And I appreciate your phone call. When we come back after this break, I want to talk a little bit about why the things that probably would have sunk any other presidential candidate in years past seem not to matter in 2016. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. It's a Political Tuesday. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. It's a Political Tuesday, and we are 63 days away from Election Day. Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, of course, the lead candidates for their particular party, indeed for this race. But my question now is, why is that? Considering all of the quote unquote scandals, the negative press, Simone email scandal or situation, whatever you want to, controversy, whatever you want to call it, for Hillary Clinton, and, you know, Donald Trump, just all kinds of off color comments and inaccurate information, more so than is usually expected when you're running. Hillary Clinton, she said convenience for the email. Do we ever get an answer for her why she did that?
No, we haven't, and we probably won't. What we do know, according to the FBI, is that there was no intent, of course, to deceive or to share foreign secrets or something. And so the convenience is seen as slightly less nefarious, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was no malicious intent here. But I think to your broader point, you can make the argument that the optics of both of these candidates' vulnerabilities kind of balance each other out in a way. I mean, if you had Hillary Clinton running against Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or John Kasich, you might see a very different campaign. I mean, the fact that she has the kind of lead that she does is in places, you know, red states, for a matter of fact, is because she's running against Donald Trump, who has his own weaknesses. And so the minute you start scrutinizing her, you think, oh, wait a minute. Well, Trump has done this. That's got to be worse. And then, well, Clinton's done this. I mean, you go back and forth. And I think a lot of it, too, is the media and the news cycle, right? I mean, these campaigns start so early.
Right.
The extent to which we're paying attention to them is in such really micro units. I mean, each day's news cycle is now like 24 seconds, right? Instead of 24
Not
hours.
Not 24 hours, 24 seconds, exactly. The same question, Dr. Morris. Historically, the kinds of issues that have come up for both of these candidates could have torpedoed their, you know, their candidacy. Does this say more about the candidates, or does it say more about the electorate?
Well, I think it says a lot about the electorate, and obviously something about the candidates. On the one side, on both sides, we have issues we don't want to talk about, so we resort to personality as a focus. On the Democratic side, you have a left that wanted to attack Wall Street, that brought up a part of the Democratic Party that was too far left to be considered viable in many opinions. On the right, you have dangerous racist tents in the post-Tea Party group, and we don't talk about those. And they tie, unfortunately, to the issues on both sides. So we are forced to deal with the things that are socially acceptable, like personality or like the technical extravagances of both of the candidates, rather than with these awkward things that link to the issues. Because on one side, you do have issue articulation. For example, Hillary Clinton brought up the issue of excessive drug costs. On the right, you had no response to that on the Republican side. If you had had a George Bush there or somebody else, the issues might have been engaged. But I don't think that Hillary would have been in a worse position because of the constraints of the Republican Party. It's still the same electorate. So I'm putting a large part of it with the electorate, but also the weaknesses of the party on both sides. And so I think the party's strength is critical here.
In 2008, we heard the phrase, don't be on the wrong side of history, as it relates to whether or not you would or would not vote for then Senator Barack Obama. Which, of course, led to, again, our first black president. We haven't heard a lot of don't be on the wrong side of history as it relates to electing the possibility of electing the first woman president or even the first non-politician. You know, so where are those folks that are looking for, that were saying those same kinds of things back in 2008 or even in 2012? Is the passion just out, or is that just not an issue?
I don't think you've heard that warning about, you know, don't miss out on the chance of electing the first woman president. I think you have heard the contrast from some Republicans who are opposing Trump and saying that they can't look their children in the eye and say that they supported this man. You've seen hundreds of Republicans now come out and say that they're either voting for Secretary Clinton, they're voting for, Gary Johnson, or they're just not saying who they're voting for.
Exactly. They're being very quiet.
And, you know, where this really gets interesting is when you look at how this all trickles down to Senate races.
I was about to ask that. Go right ahead. You read my mind, Simone. Please,
well,
go ahead.
It's a non-traditional year in that you look at the top of the ticket and you've got a Trump and a Clinton, but you've got much more, quote unquote, establishment candidates at the Senate level. They're trying so hard to distance themselves from either presidential nominee. I mean, the press releases we get each day, New Hampshire Senate race, for example, you have a popular incumbent senator, Kelly Ayotte. You've got a popular Democratic governor, Maggie Hassan. The attacks back and forth are that, you know, Ayotte is not distancing herself strong enough from Trump. She must be a Trump supporter. And then Hassan is not supporting Clinton as much as she should. She's not saying that she's trustworthy. So, you know, both sides are so desperate to try to attach their nominees to these very unpopular figures at the top of the ticket. The question is, will it work? Will Republicans be able to distance themselves enough and say that Trump is not a Republican? He's his own brand. They are Republicans. Whether that sticks, with a lot of Republicans still outperforming Trump in some polls with 2 months to go, whether that endures, I don't know.
See, Professor Morris, she makes an interesting point, because we've heard some Republican leaderships, members of the Republican leadership, quietly saying, well, let's just not worry about Donald Trump. Let's focus on the down ballot voting. Your thoughts about that?
The only toxic link in this partnership as you can have between the president and the Senate or congressional levels is with Trump. I mean, Kelly Ayotte is down in the polls because of the threat of that link. If you have, there's nobody equivalent in the Democratic Party side, not to mention there are many more Republicans up for vote on the Senate level. But so that because of the issue link as well, the inability to side with Trump on any given issue makes it even more difficult for Senate candidates to balance their relationship to him. And that means that whatever happens, that party will be weakened in 2017 because the links that tie it together, and that's one of the critical things we haven't perhaps, or we can't talk enough about, what is the party system going to look like when this election is over? If whether Hillary Clinton wins or loses, the left that peaked out under Sanders will presumably reassert once the presidency goes back to normal. And certainly if Trump gets in, well, it's hard to imagine where the left will go. But we can expect a great weakening on the Republican side and a change on the Democratic side.
But when you talk about, for example, some of the down ballot stuff, John McCain won his primary in Arizona. Marco Rubio. Surprise!
Could it be a surprise?
Well, I say that because we hadn't heard a whole lot from Marco Rubio after he dropped out of the presidential race, and now he's back and in the headlines. And so
did Debbie Wasserman. You're right. In the party.
Exactly.
It's not such a big. It's when
exactly.
they get out of the party and run in the general that we'll have to be surprised.
Okay, but do you suspect that? And I'll ask, you know, Simone this. You know, is John McCain really in trouble in Arizona? Are we expected to see a Marco Rubio stay in the Senate come November?
I think Marco Rubio has the upper hand in that race right now. Democrats are scared. You know, they did not expect to have to really contest that. You see the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee starting to shift funds into that race for the latter half of this 2-month sprint. John McCain, I think, is safer than a lot of his fellow Republicans, just given the layout, the contours of his state. The fundamentals are in his favor. On the other hand, he's running against Democratic Representative Ann Kirkpatrick, who does have a good record of fighting and winning tough races in a competitive House district.
Final thoughts from both of you. I have a couple of minutes more. As we look ahead, we are leaving day, we're leaving 63 and heading to 62 now. 62 days left in this contest. What does Donald Trump have to do, Professor Morris, in your humble opinion, to continue to gain on Hillary Clinton? And what does Hillary Clinton have to do to stay ahead?
I think Trump has to show some consistency in his positions, and he has to articulate enough so that they can be measured as consistent. I think the personality image in culting may have maxed out. That doesn't mean he won't ride on personality as somebody who can charm some people, whoever he's charming. I think Hillary, on the other hand, has to show a little bit more theatrical Hillary, partly to communicate the message more clearly. She has to be a little bit more charismatic, a little bit more aggressive, not necessarily on personal levels, but on issue articulation, as she was today, for example, and attacking Trump on the question of electoral interference from and hacking from the Russians. That is his advocacy of it. That is within an issue range, but it shows a kind of aggressiveness. And I think that's basically what would hold on to her campaign, as long as she could add to that some charisma on the policy issue. So when she announced the thing on drug pricing, it should have been done with a little bit more flair.
Maybe channeling Bill Clinton. Yeah. Who knows?
Yes.
Okay, same question, Simone. What do you think Donald Trump has to do to gain on Clinton? What does she need to do to stay ahead? Your thoughts?
For Trump, I think it comes down to temperament, right? I mean, this is something that Clinton is just waiting to sock him with. If you remember that ad, the role models ad, where you see the children sitting
yes.
in front of the TV.
Still seeing it every
this
day.
This is a really
yeah.
powerful argument that she's able to use. With this debate coming up, the extent to which he is able to look presidential, he's attacked her for not looking presidential. But if he starts looking immature on stage, she's going to be able to pounce on that, maybe not necessarily in the debate, but certainly in follow-up ads. For Clinton, I think it comes down to maybe showing a little bit more personality, letting her guard down. I think part of that is accessibility. You know, Republicans have hammered her for not holding a press conference. She made some inroads on that front this weekend by inviting reporters onto her plane. It's important not so that she doesn't hurt reporters' feelings. It's about showing that she's not running for something. She's not hiding from anything.
Also interested in seeing what happens tonight at the Commander-in-Chief Forum, where both Clinton and Trump, this will be debate light. Perhaps. So we'll definitely look forward to that. Simone Pathay and Dr. Lorenzo Morris, thank you both so much. Love you two. Great, great minds to talk about this fascinating topic. 62.5 days. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, September 6th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR.